Hello. Hopefully no one will doze off during this, but this is going to be relatively short, so I think we're all ready to go eat or something. So my name is Anthony Campbell, and Magdalena Szaflorski is one of my co-chairs on my dissertation project, and I will say that this is just a very small portion of my dissertation. This is like the applied portion, so it's about 5% of my dissertation. And I have no relationships to disclose. And so I'm probably talking to people who already know all of this, so I'm going to keep this brief. That academic faith community partnerships can be strategic tools for addressing public health and health disparities. That is a surprise to this group. And effective implementation of these types of partnerships are dependent on a couple of things. First, you really want to apply principles of community engagement and building coalitions that have been talked about in some of the previous presentations. And the other thing is you really want to identify the opportunities and the barriers that exist at the congregational level. So you really want to understand the particular congregations that you're trying to reach. And also, within that congregation, it's really important to understand where the clergy, especially the senior clergy, is coming from in terms of how they view health, how they define health in the first place. So there are some definitional issues like we talked about in the previous presentation. How they perceive health issues in their congregation and in their community is very important. And also how they approach health from their perspectives in their congregation. I think that's also important. And so these academic faith partnerships should really be compatible with the perspective of the clergy members. A lot of times we do surveys of congregations, communities, but then really don't consider, you know, how the clergy actually view this. And so the current study is basically my dissertation research again. I conducted 25 in-depth interviews with senior clergy. I was very picky to get the senior clergy because a lot of people want to refer you to their health minister, but I really wanted to hear what the pastors said about health and how they viewed it. And I may have interviewed some of the same people that Dr. Pascal interviewed, but my interviews took place in Jefferson County, Alabama, predominantly in right around the Birmingham area. And it's all urban. It's an all urban community. I interviewed 17 African American senior clergy, 15 men and 2 women, and 8 white clergy, 5 men and 3 women. And so these represent kind of a diversity within Protestant denominations. Quite a few AME, CME, Baptist churches, also United Methodist Church, Southern Baptist, Presbyterian, and non-denominational churches. I really had to cut off the CME churches and the United Methodist churches because it seemed like they were very interested in talking to me about health. So I've got a list of about 30 other people that I could talk to, so I had to cut it off at some point. And the methodology I used a kind of a modified grounded theory approach. I really wanted to hear what the perspectives of the clergy themselves were. And I used a respondent-driven sampling method, which was fairly successful. I think by, you know, having a referral from another pastor was really kind of an effective way to reach this particular group, because pastors are very busy. They may not want to be bothered by a grad student wanting to talk to them for an hour. And I will mention that about the average amount of time spent in interviews was about an hour and a half, but interviews range from about 45 minutes to 3 hours. So quite lengthy transcripts. And pastors were really interested in talking about health overall. Well, before I get into this, the scope of my dissertation was just quite huge. I asked clergy how they defined health. Tell me what health is. And so many of them just kind of said, well, you know, that's a very good question. You know, we kind of take for granted what health is. But then once they started talking about, you know, what is health, they all, probably 95% of them, came up with what we all consider kind of a holistic definition of health. You know, it's the standard, you know, physical, emotional, mental, and then spiritual. This is a Marco Rubio moment here. Is that the guy that reached for his water? Okay, so they all came up with this holistic definition of health. And some which I would consider kind of an expanded holistic view of health, where they looked at some of the issues that Dr. Pascal mentioned, like education or employment, economic issues, all of those things they consider to be health. So it kind of reverberates with the theme of this conference, that health is in all policies. So they talked about how a lot of their communities didn't have the economic resources or the education, but they considered that to be part of health as well. So to them, health was a very broad topic, which produced a lot more questions for me, which led to a lot of responses from them. And when you ask a pastor to talk, they give you a lot of information. So basically, they have this holistic view of health, and then how they arrive at that definition of health is very different for pretty much everybody. Each person has their own way that they develop this definition. They'll come up with things like, you know, I had a family experience, I was a caregiver for my mom, I have a health issue myself, I'm overweight, you know, I struggle with these kinds of things. Some of them talked about education through their denomination. That's how they came up with this. So a lot of different ways that they arrive at that definition of health. And so another question I asked them was, you know, what do you see as essential for developing a health ministry in your church, if you were to do that? The most common responses were very similar to Dr. Pascal's. Information and resources was number one. Pretty much everybody mentioned that. Partnerships was right behind that. As well as, you need a passionate, dedicated, knowledgeable person, such as like a nurse in the congregation, or somebody who's just really, you know, passionate about the topic of health and, you know, communicating information. So a lot of the pastors felt that it was important to enable someone else to do that. And that's kind of like they would call equipping the saints. You know, so they say, you know, I want to, you know, encourage other people to do this. I can't do everything. However, there were some pastors that were highly engaged in matters of health themselves. So these were the questions related to developing this academic faith partnership. I asked them, would they be interested in participating in a collaborative partnership with other clergy, as well as academic researchers from UAB? I asked them, you know, how would you implement such a partnership? What are some suggestions you would have? And how could we, as academic researchers, contribute to the health programming in your congregation if you so desired? And so there was overwhelming interest in this partnership. And I will say that because of the respondent-driven sampling, I got a lot of pastors that were already interested in health. So you're getting, you know, kind of a skewed group of pastors. But I still think, you know, it's still relevant here to pastors in the general area. So 21 of the 25 of the clergy affirmed this interest in a academic faith partnership. And so these are some example quotes. Oh, absolutely, yes. That was just a really common response. I would love to do it. And I would be interested because I have this holistic approach to spiritual formation. And then they talked about how UAB could, you know, provide additional information for their congregations. We did have, or I did have, four that declined to participate. Two were bivocational. They said they were overextended. These two in particular were already highly involved in health organizations at UAB. So they were saying, I've already come off of this board and I can't do so much anymore. So they begrudgingly declined to participate, one did. Another talked about being burned out in another organization, a health organization, and then another was finishing his DMin and declined for now. So just a couple of points here, and these are really kind of suggestions from the participants themselves. So many of the clergy that I interviewed said you really want to focus it on the clergy themselves. So make them the priority. You know, help them, you know, determine what it is that they want from this kind of partnership. You can't come into, you know, a congregation or a group of pastors and tell them this is what we want to, you know, talk about. We want to have it from the priorities of the clergy themselves. And then, you know, they suggested that the first meeting could be, the first meeting of this partnership could be focused on what it is that the clergy want themselves. Several people talked about they want diversity. Well, Birmingham is a quite segregated area, especially in congregations. Even the churches that said they had a diverse congregation, many of them would have like 150 people in their, you know, average weekly attendance, and they would have five white people in their congregation, but they would say, we have a fairly diverse congregation. We have five white, you know, congregants. So, but these are typically, you know, 98% African-American, 98%, you know, percent white congregations. But they talked about they need a diversity of participants among the clergy who are participating in this. They said that this would be really good to bring everybody together, not just African-American clergy. So bringing the whole congregation together. And they also talked about this, their need for an informal networking opportunity. So this one Episcopalian rector, White, mentioned this: the more formal it is, the more likely I am to feel really busy that week. If I can go to something and exchange ideas and not feel like I'm going to take a class on this, this is what, you know, I want. So it's kind of the opposite of what I was thinking, you know, a formal kind of thing for them to get information. But they really want kind of an informal setting so that they can network and discuss things. This guy also suggested that if you serve wine prior, you know, you might get people to come. So he was just kind of a joker. Also, you know, it would allow me to get new ideas that I can bring back to my people. So this networking opportunity, interacting with other clergy outside of their own congregation, was important to them. And this was another theme. Equitable, sustainable partnerships was very important. They noted that these one-time events, like, you know, UAB, for example, coming in and helping with the health fair. They say that's helpful, but it's not you know, that's not great. That's not sustainable. That doesn't really, you know, really help us with the overall health of our congregation or community. We want something that's long term. We want something that we can use for more than just one time. And I've seen this a lot of times where UAB will, you know, nursing school will come out and do blood pressure screenings one time. You know, that's helpful in that day, but you got to have it go on further than that. And so several talked about actually getting something back, like assistance with programming. So that's something that is sustainable. If we could train, you know, somebody in the congregation to continue doing blood pressure screenings or something like that, that would be helpful. Just helping with programming is something that was a common theme. And building relationships was an important factor that came up as well. You can come in here and do something one time and we'd not see it anymore, and then we wouldn't do it anymore. But if we build these relationships between UAB and churches and clergy among themselves, we can then develop the resources to help us better educate our congregations to make better choices. And receiving information and resources was a really, really common response. And this was in African-American and white congregations, but it was kind of particularly pointed out in the African-American congregations that sometimes in the black community, we're the last to find out when it comes to information. And information goes a long way when you have it, especially to poor people who are not privy to a lot of information. So there's a disparity in health information that I think could be alleviated through such a partnership. And I want to say one thing before I get to the final thoughts. Another pastor talked about, you know, I kept mentioning this academic faith partnership. One of the pastors said, you know, if you call it an academic faith partnership, they're going to see it as the priority is the academic. So if you turn it around and say this is a faith academic partnership, that small change really goes a long way in convincing clergy and congregations that this really is about the churches and the congregations. So that was an important thought that I didn't include here. But final thoughts. So if we're to develop a faith or an academic, or I actually fixed it there, a faith academic partnership, we need to consider the needs and the preferences of the clergy as well. And finally, many clergy are interested in these diverse, ongoing, sustainable partnerships with academic institutions that offer health information and resources for their congregations and communities. Thank you. Any questions?
How will you address the fact that people in academia are kind of under pressure to publish or perish, so they may not always have the time that it takes to invest in these long-term relationships, even if they may generally want to, but they're under pressure? So how do you address that whole issue?
I think one way is to find a graduate student like myself that is working on a dissertation, but really we've talked about that, and there have been some efforts to try to develop these kinds of partnerships, and a couple actually exist. There's just different ways of implementing them that may be more effective than others. What we've thought about, and what I talked about with the pastors, is, you know, maybe developing, and this is an ongoing process, we're still in the development of this, but actually convening this group of clergy and, you know, academia people together, and then kind of, like, I think the key is asking them what they need, and once we find out what they need, then we can start developing those relationships and giving them the resources to continue this actually on their own. You know, so if you develop it, you know, it'll keep going. So that's what we're trying to do, is create something that's sustainable. Does that answer your question?
I think I love my some other time that we can be just learning more about some of the resources. Some feedback that we've heard in terms of what the needs were.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, was any of the resources developed, any of them include things like scripture or references to their faith, or was those some of the recommendations that you received?
Yes, and you know, I think that's one of the limitations of academics and healthcare, you know, talking about health with pastors, is that they come to health from a very medical model. So you're talking about physical health, basically, diagnoses. And so the definitions that all of these pastors came up with was this holistic definition, which included spiritual, which is often left out of definitions of academics, right? And so I think adding that spiritual component is very important to clergy, and that's the priority of that they, you know, express. You know, they say, first, we're here for the person's spiritual aspect, and then all the other is going to come, right? So including, they talk about including the spiritual basis for talking about health. And many of them give lots of, you know, scriptural references for why they should talk about health. And so that's how they communicate to their congregations that, you know, addressing physical health and mental health is important to the congregation, is by using those scriptural references. They say this has to be Bible-based, you know. This has to be based on, you know, why we're here as a church.
More where we need to do that. I still think it's limited because to me it's still including scripture to get faith communities to buy into our message. But I think what we're missing the boat is actually studying and researching what happens when people are private of faith. And I don't see much conversation or research around what happens when faith itself is private. And in the work that I've done, we dabble with it, and what we learn is in some cases when people actually, their faith is the motivator for making a change, they have much greater ability to make it in any health statistic or education or research. If they feel like God.
Right, and that came out in several of the interviews. The clergy were saying, you know, you can have all of this, you know, these doctors and medical procedures, but, you know, faith, they've seen, is the key for them, that, you know, if they don't have the spiritual component present, then, you know, nothing else is going to be effective. And so if you don't have the spiritual component in, you know, in play, you're not really healthy. So the definition of what a healthy person is included spirituality and their faith.
There are some in the Birmingham area, especially. There were maybe two or three, maybe in the Tupelo, Mississippi area, but not. But we didn't end up with community.
Okay.
Yeah, there were efforts put in place. Is what I'm trying to say, but our example ended up being.
Unfortunately, I specifically, you know, looked at Protestant, you know, organizations. Basically, there are Jewish and, you know, other faiths. But if you look at the thousands of churches in the Jefferson County area, it's about 95%, you know, what I'm looking at. So, but I would love to see the differences, if there are any differences among, you know, clergy from other faiths, to see how they define health, how they think about it, how they respond to it. And then also this partnership that we're developing is not just for the people that I've talked to. This is going to be opened up to more people if they want to come from other faith organizations.
So there's some unique rules of engagement, I think, in terms of high university faith institutions, particularly Muslims that I work with in Chicago. Diet is very much part of their theology, very much part of their faith, what they eat and how they eat. And you're not kept living in that state of youth, right? So there are some differences, and I think when you talk about Christian faith, there's still, I think, in a lot of Christian churches, understanding that why health should be a priority, right? In their congregation, and we're helping them see in the theology of God's ministry, the Jesus Christ.
Yeah, those are my son works in the outreach for Islamic Relief, and my whole family is Muslim this week. And he is all over the place, as you're saying, he's doing food programs, he's doing outreach in relation to what I was talking about last night, that you're doing public health work. But it's an integral part of the faith tradition in Islamic
community.
And for me, because of the small number, it would be a confidentiality issue, especially for the, yeah.